Okay, today's daf is Shabbos daf Lamed Vav. Welcome back to the dark, everybody. And we left off in daf Lamed Hey Amid Beis. We are holding in the middle of daf Lamed Hey Amid Beis. We were discussing how they would blow, they had a minhag that they would blow Shesh Tkiyos on Erev Shabbos in order to get people to move from weekday activities toward Shabbos activities and toward refraining from doing malacha. We had a machlokes tana'im, what the third Tkiyah signified. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said it was shlishlis lachlotz tefillin, was to take off the tefillin, whereas Rabbi Nassin held that the third tekiah was lahadlik hasaner, was to tell people to light neros Shabbos. So we left off at the words, I believe, masnila Rabbi Yehuda l'Rav Yitzchak. Lamed Hey Amid Beis. About a little more than halfway down the page, Masnile Rabbi Yehuda l'Rabbi Yitzchak. So says the Gemara, Masnile Rabbi Yehuda l'Rabbi Yitzchak berei shnia lahadlik es haner, that the second kia was to tell people to light the ner. So says the Gemara, well, come on, who's that going like? We had two opinions in Tanayim what the third kia was for. So it's lo Rabbi Nassim v'lo Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. This fits with neither of the opinions because no one said that the second kia was lahadlik es haner. Everyone seemed to agree that the second kia was lahavtil ir v'chanuyos, was to get people who work in the city to stop working. So says Gemara, Ella shlishis lahadlik es haner kiman k'Rabbi Nassim. Rather, what it means to say is that the third tekiah was to get people to light candles, and that's following the sheet of Rabbi Nassim. Tanit be Rabbi Shmuel, sheish tekiahs token erev Shabbos, there are six tekiahs that they would blow on erev Shabbos. Hischlit ko tekiah rishona nimnu ham de basada milad milachrosh milasos kamalach shabasados. When they would blow the first tekiah, so everyone who was out in the fields would stop plowing and doing all sorts of work in the fields. Ve'ein hakrovin rasha'in likanes ad she'yavo'u rechokin. But people who lived closer to the city were not allowed to come to enter the city and to come in until the people who were far away, who were working far away, had come closer. Ve'ikansu kulam ke'achon. And this way everyone can gather together and can all come in at the same time. I saw a discussion about why that should be the case. Why do the people who live closer have to wait for the people who live far away? Where is there such a halacha that you have to wait for somebody to come closer? So the Sfas Emes wonders about that, and the Sfas Emes says that the tekiah that was blown in the city was probably not heard by the people in the sados. So he writes tekiah heisa shegamhim kishiyishma tekiah tzrichel nitkoa gamkein kadei shiyishma rechokin. So the people who worked close to the city had to blow their own tekiah so that the people out in the sados who were a little further would be able to hear it, because they weren't able to hear the tekiah of the Chazon HaYir. So it was their job. It was the responsibility of the intermediate people, the people who are a little bit outside the city and not all the way outside the city, not all the way in the fields, to be responsible for the people in the fields. That's why they had to wait for them. It was their responsibility to make sure that they heard it. So it reminds me a little bit of like the Mishnayos in Rosh Hashanah described when they were Kaveh the Chodesh, had they have people at the mountaintops lifting up the flames, where one guy saw the next mountaintop and he would lift up the flames. So with the tekiahs also, these the people who were a little bit far away heard the tekiah and then they would blow to remind the next people. So anyway, so they all had to come in together. But still the stores were open and everyone had their wares out to sell. Once they blew the second tekiah, so then they would take away the window shutters that they used as a table to display their wares, and they closed up the stores. But they still had hot water and pots of hot food on the stovetop. Once they blew the third tekiah, so they would take away all the food from on top of the fire, they would be matmin whatever they needed to insulate, they would light whatever they needed to light, the candles that they needed to light, then they would wait for the amount of time that it takes to roast a small fish or to put bread in the oven. They would blow a tekiah through a tekiah, v'shoves, and then Shabbos would start, everyone would stop, they would stop doing all malacha. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rav Chanina, Shamati Shem Bal Lahadlik Achar Sheish Tkiyos Madlik. He says, I heard that if you miss Hadlakas Neros, and they already blew all six tkiyos, where you think it's got to be Shabbos already. So he said, I heard you're still allowed to light candles right afterwards. Shari Nasu Chacham Shir, the Chazon HaKnesses, the Holich Shofar Lebeso. Because the Chachamim gave the Chazon HaKnesses, the guy himself who blew the shofar, they had to give him time to put his shofar away. So when he blew that last tkiyah, it wasn't actually Shabbos yet, because then he wouldn't be able to put a shofar away. So there's a built-in buffer zone that you have a little bit of extra time where you can still light candles. Amar Lavan came to Sata Dvarech L'Shiur, and he says, no, that's not a good idea, because that can't be the case, because then it's going to be a different amount of time depending on who the Chazan HaKnesses is, how far away he lives, how slowly he walks, how quickly he walks. It will be very, very difficult to cheshbon such things, and you're going to run into trouble when you start trying to make these cheshbonos. Rather, we would not give any extra time. He would blow the shofar right at the last minute. What would he do with the shofar? Elamakom tznur yesh lo lechazan haknesses barosh gago sheshom aniach shofaro, that he would have a special place on the top of his roof, from the rooftop where he would blow the shofar, where he could put it away right then and there, right on that spot. And the reason why that was necessary is because there is an isser to be metaltel, it's an isser of muktzah to handle shofaros and to handle chatzotros on Shabbos. This is a kasha of the Magen Avraham in Sim Reish Samach Vav, Sivkat and Yotes, uses this gemara as a kasha on the pesak of the Ramah. The Ramah writes that if you're already holding muktzah in your hand, so once it's already in your hand, you can put it down wherever you want. You don't have to put it down mamish on the spot where you're standing. If you're already holding it, so you're already being metaltel, go to wherever you want it to be put down, and you can put it down there. Says Magen Avraham, our Gemara says they dafka had to have a makom on the Rosh Gag where he could put it down right away on the Rosh Gag. What do you mean? He's holding it in his hand already. According to the Ramah, let him go back to his house and put it there. So the Magen Avraham suggests that maybe even if you accept the Pesach of the Ramah, you're not supposed to do that l'chadchila. The guy knew he was going to be blowing the shofar right before Shabbos, so you're not supposed to set up a system where you're going to have to be carrying it handling it, I shouldn't say carrying, it's nothing to do with Hotzah, where you're going to have to be handling it on Shabbos. So that's the... That's why they would have to have a makom mutzna. They would have to have a special private place on the top of his roof where he would be able to put it away. Okay, says the Gemara Vayta now. So we have one braisa that we just quoted that says that you're not allowed to be metaltel a shofar or chatzotros on Shabbos. The Gemara is going to quote two other braisas which seem to contradict this. First, the Gemara says Vatanya, shofar metaltel v'chatzotros ein metaltelin. We have another braisa that says that you are allowed to be metaltel a shofar. It's not a shofar. It's not muktzah. Chatzotros is only a problem of muktzah, but not shofar. So it's against this first braisa that said they're both a problem of muktzah. So before we quote the third braisa, the Gemara is going to try to reconcile these two braisas. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav, what does it change it to on the side? I don't know, I can't find it, but Amar Rav Yosef, yeah, there it is, Amar Rav Yosef, Lo Kasha, Kan B'Yachid, Kan B'Tzibur. It depends if you're dealing with a Yachid or a Tzibur. Whether a shofar is muktzah, means it would depend on, obviously, whether it's usable for some mutter purpose on Shabbos. Whether it's designated for use of some mutter purpose on Shabbos depends on whose shofar it is. Is it a Yachid shofar or a Tzibur shofar? So Amar Le Abaye, Ubi Yachid Amai Chazi. What do you mean? What would a Yachid use a shofar for that would take away its muktzah status and say that, okay, it's just a regular kli? Why would a Yachid use a shofar for anything but blowing? What would he use it for? And Sigmara Holva Roy Ligamea Bomayim Latinok. If you put your finger on the edge of the on the opening of the shofar, on the mouth of the shofar, you can put some water in it, and it could be used as a makeshift water bottle to bring water for a child. So as a result of that, it's considered like a water bottle, and therefore it's not going to be muktzah. But for a tzibur would never do that, because a tzibur doesn't have a child. The yachid has a child. The tzibur doesn't have children to worry about. Says Mar, yes, the tzibur certainly has children to worry about. But tzibur nami chazi legamei letinok ani. The tzibur is responsible to take care of aniyim. It's on the tzibur to be mefarnes aniyim. This is again part of the broader concept that although there is an individual mitzvah that each and every one of us has a requirement to give tzedakah, there's a mitzvah on the tzibur to take care of the needy as well. Tzedakah is one of those special mitzvahs that has both the chovas hayachid and a chovas hatzibur. So this is the tzibur's responsibility to take care of children sometimes if there's a tinok ani. So it should be every bit the kli in regards to the tzibur as it is in regards to the yachid. And therefore we're back to the question that we started with. Why does one braisa suggest that a shofar is muktzah and the other braisa suggests the shofar is not muktzah? Visu, plus, to complicate matters even further, there's a third braisa. Hadatanya kishem shemitatlin es ha-shofar, kach mitatlin es ha-chatzotos. A third braisa that says that you're allowed to be mitatl both the shofar and even chatzotros. So money, who's that going like? It goes like neither of the first two brises. So says the Gemara, to be miyashiv all three brises with three-way contradiction. One brise that says you could be metaltel both shofar and chatzotros. Another one says you could be metaltel neither. And another brise that says you could be metaltel chatzotros, shofar, but not chatzotros. So what do we do with these brises? Three opinions in Tanaim. Ha Rabbi Yehuda, Ha Rabbi Shimon, Ha Rabbi Nechemya. The brisa that says you're allowed to be metaltel shofar but not chatzotros is going like the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, because chatzotros are mukta. A shofar is not mukta because it's a kli that you can use as a water bottle, so it doesn't make a difference. Yachrit Tzibor, we scratch that chilik entirely. It doesn't matter. You can use a shofar as a water bottle. Anybody could use it as a water bottle, and therefore it is not mukta. Chatzotzos can only be used as a trumpet, as a musical instrument, and therefore it is mukta. That's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. The Braisa that says that you're allowed to be metaltel both shofar and chatzotzos, that goes like the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, because Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of muktzah. Rabbi Shimon, when the Gemara will often use an expression, Rabbi Shimon less le muktzah. It doesn't mean that he doesn't hold that there exists a concept of muktzah, but he has a very limited application of muktzah. Most cases of what we would call muktzah, Rabbi Shimon would say is completely mutter. There are certain types of cases that even Rabbi Shimon would admit is muktzah. For instance, Tosus points out, muktzah machmas chesron kis. If you have something that's not a klisha malach d'leisr, it's not just something that you use typically for a forbidden act on Shabbos, like chatzotzros that you would use for a musical instrument. No, something that you would never use for anything other than the forbidden act because you'd be afraid to ruin it. So the example of muktzah machmas chesron kis, let's say a shochet's knives. A shochet is very, very careful never to use his knives. If, let's say, he needs to cut open a package that's difficult to open, so he would never just take a shechita knife to open up the package. He's very, very careful not to use it for anything but shechita, because he doesn't want it to develop a nick. It could be very bad for him if it develops a nick. If he forgets to fix it before the next shechita, he's gonna trafe up a whole animal, and that's gonna cost him a lot of money. So shochet would never use the shechita knives for anything else. So this is a big discussion: what exactly fits in that category of muktzah machmas chesron kis, and what fits in the category of klisha malach d'leisr? Even we who paskin like Rabbi Yehuda that klisha malach d'leisr is also muktzah, there are still differences in halacha between klisha malach d'leisr and muktzah machmas chesron kis. For instance, a klisha malach d'leisr, the halacha is you're allowed to be metaltel l'tzarech gufo l'tzarech mekomo. So let's say this Shabbos, it shouldn't happen, but let's say in 48 hours from now, there's still no electricity here, and there are people that have to get around in the dark, so can you carry around a flashlight? If you have a flashlight, that's it. You're not allowed to turn on a flashlight, that's for sure, but you have a flashlight that's already lit. Can you carry it around on Shabbos? So if you hold it to klisha malach d'leisr, then certainly you're allowed to. You're allowed to be metaltel klisha malach d'leisr. Now, if there's no eruv, you can't carry it outside. But in your house, if it's a klisha malach d'leisr, so there's no problem with carrying klisha malach d'leisr, it's tzorach gufo, because you need to use it. Or if it's the tzorach mekom, but now we're talking about the tzorach gufo. If it's muktzah machmas chesron kis, if the flashlight is such a fancy flashlight that you would never use it as a paperweight, or you would never use it as anything else because you'd be so too terrified to ruin it, so then you would not be allowed to carry it. So let's say you're using an iPhone flashlight, let's say. So the iPhone has a flashlight, as we've discovered recently in the Daf Yom Shir. So if you're using an iPhone flashlight, then that would probably be muktzah machmas chesron kis, even if you leave it on before Shabbos, because no one would ever use their, well, not no one, but most people wouldn't use their iPhone for other things other than as an iPhone, because they wouldn't want to ruin it. It's a much more expensive piece of equipment. But anyway, Rabbi Shimon holds that klisha malach d'leisr doesn't exist. There's no problem with klisha malach d'leisr. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon's going to say, you're allowed to be metaltel chatzotzos also. It's not muktzah machmas chesron kis, just klisha malach d'leisr, so that's going to be completely fine. And ha Rabbi Nechemya, and the final braisa that said that you're not allowed to be metaltel neither shofar nor chatzotzos, who's that going like? That's going like Rabbi Nechemya. Because Rabbi Nechemya holds that even something that's a kli that you can use for a mutter purpose, like a shofar, which Rabbi Yehuda held, you're allowed, you could use it as a water bottle. So even such a thing, Rabbi Nechemya holds, you're only allowed to use it, you're only allowed to be metatel it for its primary purpose. And a shofar's primary purpose is to emit noises, to make sounds. You're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. So therefore, a shofar remains aser as muktzah. That's the shita, the very strict shita of Rabbi Nechemya. We pass on Rabbi Yehuda, but that's a very strict shita of Rabbi Nechemya. So says the Gemara, Umay shofar nami. By the way, when we say shofar, we mean chatzotros. And when we say chatzotros, we mean shofar. What does that mean? Why does the Gemara, what bothered the Gemara that it had to reverse the definitions of the terms? So he said, when Rabbi Nechemya says that you're not allowed to be metaltel shofar or chatzotros, so what should he have said first? Rashi points out, when Rabbi Nechemya says that you're not allowed to be metaltel either one of them, he said you're not allowed to be metaltel chatzotros, and also you're not allowed to be metaltel shofros. I'm sorry, shofros and also chatzotros. He said shofar first. Now, if you're not allowed to be metaltel shofar, isn't it obvious that you're not allowed to be metaltel chatzotros? Chatzotros are more chamur than a shofar. Chatzotros don't have an alternate usage other than to make a sound. They can't be used as a water bottle. Why would Rabbi Nechemya have to say, after he already told me that you're not allowed to be metaltel shofar, why would he have to add you're also not allowed to be metaltel chatzotros? So that's what the Gemara is saying. Clearly, Rabbi Nechemya, when he says shofar, he means chatzotros. When he says chatzotros, he means shofar. So first he's telling us you're not allowed to be metaltel chatzotros. Then he's saying, lo zu av zu. Not only do you not have to be metaltel, you're not allowed to be metaltel chatzotros, you're even not allowed to be metaltel a shofar. So that leads the Gemara into a discussion, and this will conclude the rest of the perek, of five items that the names were changed, that the names were reversed between two different things. Five different examples where we find names were changed. So the Gemara starts out with three that Rav Chista pointed out. Kid Rav Chista, Dam Rav Chista, Hani Tlas Mili, Ishtani Shemayu Michichar Beis HaMikdash. Shemayu Michichar Beis HaMikdash. There are three things whose names changed after the Churban HaBayis. So three that Rav Chista points out. Number one, Chatzutzrata Shufra, Shufra Chatzutzrata. Shofros or Chatzotros, Chatzotros or Shofros. They changed the names. They changed the dictionary meaning of it after the Churban HaBayis. L'mainav Kamina, why do I need to know what's called what? L'shofar shal Rosh Hashanah, so that I can know that shofar shal Rosh Hashanah, I can know what to blow, that I'm going to think that I'm going to take out trumpets and I'm going to start blowing that for Rosh Hashanah. So it's important to know that, no, when it says shofar, it's not what we call shofar, it's what we call chatzotzot, it's the ram's horn, it's the animal horn, it's not a trumpet. Now Tosos in a few places in Shas, and Avodah Zarah Daf Mem Zayin, Zvachim Samaches, Menachos Daf Chavches, Tosos asks that there seems to be a steer in Mishnayis, because in Maseches Kinim, in the third paragraph of Maseches Kinim, the Mishnah Vav, the Mishnah tells us that a certain animal, when it's alive, only emits one sound, when it groans, when it makes a sound, but when it's dead, it could be used to make all sorts of different musical instruments, and it says, Karnov L'chatzotros, that its horns can be used to make chatzotros. Yet in Maseches Tamid, the Gemara, the Mishnah describes what are chatzotros. Chatzotros are silver trumpets. They're not made from animals. So Tosafot says, I don't understand. How can you use horns to make chatzotros? Horns should only be used to make shofaros. So Tosafot says, one Teretz Tosafot says, in all these different places in Shas, the answer is Shabbos Daf Lamed Vav, that the definition was changed. That when the Mishnah in Kinim says that they use the horns to make chatzotros, it means what we call shofar. But that's what it means. So Tos Yontif points out, wait a second, when the Gemara wants to know, L'may Nafkamina, that they changed the definition, shouldn't we say, if Tosus is right, shouldn't we say that Nafkamina is to be able to touch up a Mishnah Maseches Kinim, to know what the Mishnah Maseches Kinim means? So he says, yeah, that's also a Nafkamina, but the Gemara has a better Nafkamina, because the Nafkamina of knowing what to blow every year in Rosh Hashanah is a Nafkamina halacha l'maisa and how to behave. It's not just a Nafkamina in whether you know how to learn or you don't know how to learn. Okay, it's important to know how to learn, also to know how to read a Mishnah and Maseches Kinim, but the stronger nafkamina is to have a nafkamina that actually affects the halacha. Whatever Rav Blachman in Karen B'Avna, whenever he used to say a chakira that didn't really have a nafkamina, so guys would ask him, "L'may nafkamina, Rebbe? Where's the nafkamina over here?" And he would always say, "Nafkamina is whether you know how to learn or you don't know how to learn." That's a very unsatisfying answer. You want a real nafkamina, nafkamina l'maisa. So the Gemara gives a better nafkamina the mice of whether you should blow shofar of Rosh Hashanah or not a shofar of Rosh Hashanah. So says the Gemara, the second thing that they changed the definition of, arava tzaftzifa, tzaftzifa arava. Two types of branches. So something that used to be called arava is called tzaftzifa, tzaftzifa is called arava. Lamai nafkamina, what's nafkamina? What you call it? Lululav. You need to know what to use for dalad minim shebelulav. So you have to make sure you have aravos that are the proper aravos. And the final one is pesura pesurta. The final one of Rav Chista, at least, is Psura Psurta, Psurta Psura. Two different types of tables. The type of table that they used to call Psura, they call Psurta. Psurta, they call Psura. One's a large table, one's a smaller table. L'may nafkamina, who cares what type of table? There's no mitzvah that involves a table. L'mekach memkar, someone tells you they're selling you a Psura, and you open up the package when it gets delivered, and it turns out it's what you thought was a Psurta, it's the wrong thing. So you should know that you have a Mekach Tos over there, what's expected to be delivered based on the contemporary definition. I just noticed this morning, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in his comments in the back of the Gemara, Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, wait a second, what's the game over here? Like, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, they just decided for fun to open up the dictionary and start erasing things and moving things around. What was the point? What were they trying to accomplish over here? So he writes that he says, nearly tam nachol ledavar lefisha b'mikdash hayu token b'shinei amyachad. In the mikdash they would blow chatzotros and shofaros, and mishacharav Beis HaMikdash batlu chatzotros Rosh Hashanah. Gemara Rosh Hashanah daf chav zayin. After the Churban, we no longer had a mitzvah of chatzotzos. It's one of those mitzvahs that are only when there's a Beis HaMikdash. So he says, that's why Chazal dafka went out of their way to make a zecher ledavar. Pasuk says, im eshkacheich Yerushalayim. So we darshan from there that you're not supposed to forget Yerushalayim. You're supposed to make a zecher to everything that we used to have in the Beis HaMikdash. So minayin shalosim zecher lemikdash. How do I know you're supposed to make a zecher lemikdash? Because the pasuk says, the Gemara actually in two different places quotes two different psukim. One is Imesh Kachech Yerushalayim, the other one is Tzion Hi Doresh Einla, Mechal Debayi Drisha, that you need to be Doresh Tzion, but whichever it is, it may be two separate dinim, it's not a discussion for now, but the point is that we do a variety of things to try to bring to mind what used to be in the Beis HaMikdash. So they said, look, if we only have shofar, and we still call it shofar, no one's even going to remember that there's such a thing called chatzotros. So they decided to take what we have as shofar, call it chatzotros, and that way it's as if we're making a statement that this is all we got in terms of chatzotros. We don't have the real chatzotros. Our shofar is the closest thing we have to what we would call chatzotros. So he says that's why they changed that one. What about the arava to tzaftzifa? So he says there used to be a mitzvah of arava in the mikdash as well. Aside from the arava shebelulav, there was the mitzvah sarava and the Hoshana Rabbah. There was a special mitzvah sarava in the base of mikdash where there would be makif the mizbech, etc. We don't have such a mitzvah. We have a minag to do some sort of zecher to it, but we don't have such a mitzvah sarava anymore. So as a zecher to the mitzvah sarava, they dafka used the term. When they called it an arava, they stopped calling it an arava, they called it tzaftzifa. Because tzaftzifa is the Gemara Masech HaSukkah says, it recalls Gnusan Shel Yisrael. It's a name that's used as a derogatory name for Klal Yisrael. It's something that tells us that we're in bad shape. So it's not that there was a mitzvah called tzavtzah, there's another mitzvah sarava, but we call our arava something that has a more negative connotation to remind ourselves that we don't really have the full mitzvah sarava anymore. And he says that there's also some sort of explanation for psura and psurta, but he doesn't say what it is. So I don't know what he does with the third one, but he says that these aren't random, these aren't just stam definitions just happen to change. All of this is with meaning to it. Says the Gemara Vayter now, Amar Abaye. Abaye says, I have a fourth one, a fourth definition that changed. Af anu nomar, huvlila bekasi, bekasi huvlila. Different stomachs of the animal, the second stomach and the third stomach, the names of the different stomachs of the animal were switched for each other. If you find a needle in the thickness of the wall of the beikasi, of the beis hakosos, of that stomach, if the needle doesn't puncture all the way through and through the entire thickness of the wall, the animal will still be kosher. If it punctures all the way through the entire thickness of the wall, then the animal is a treifa. But you need to know which stomach we're talking about, where if you find this needle, that's going to be the halal. halacha. So that's why it's important to know what the definitions are and how the definitions have changed. Amar of Ashi, Rav Ashi says, I got a fifth one. Af anu nomar, Bavel Borsif, Borsif Bavel. The place that we call Bavel is really Borsif. The place that we call Borsif is really Bavel. So a name of a place that has changed. L'may nafkamino, what's a nafkamino about the name of a place, whether it's Bavel or Borsif? L'gite nashim, nafkamino would be for a get. What's the nafkamina for a get, whether you call it Bavel or Borsif? Rashi has two possibilities. First possibility, Rashi says, is at the very beginning of Maseches Gittin, the first five blot or so, five, six blot of Maseches Gittin, is about one issue. And that is that when you bring a get from Medinas Hayam to Eretz Yisrael, you need to say, B'fanei Nechtav or B'fanei Nechtam. You need to say that I saw this get being written and I saw this get being signed. If you were a shliach to bring a get, if it's the husband just giving the get, you don't have to say that. But if you're a shliach bringing a get on behalf of the husband, you have to say, B'fanei Nechtav. We still do this today. When my brother, years ago in the shul, my brother had to bring a get from California to deliver to a woman in Cedar, so we quickly put together a Beis Din in the shul after davening one day, and we had the woman come, and my brother was the shliach laholachas haget, and he said b'fanei nechtav u'b'fanei nechtam. So we have to, that's an important statement. Why do we have to say b'fanei nechtav u'b'fanei nechtam? That's a machlokas at the beginning of Maseches Gittin between Rabba and Rava. Rabba says, and then we're only going to focus on Rabba now, Rabba says it's because ein b'kiyin l'shma. People in Medina Siam, where they're writing Gittin in these faraway places, very often there's very little quality control on the Gittin. People don't know, a lot of the Batei Dinim have no idea what they're doing. And they write Gittin in all the wrong ways, they don't follow all of the halachos, so they're not Beki in Lishma. So you need to, they don't know that a get has to be written Lishma, Lishem, this man and this woman, that has to be written with these people in mind. They would think that you could just write up random names in a get, and oh, you want a Shimon and Sarah get? And they used to not have two, three names. Everyone, so how many names were there in the Jewish people? So you just write up again with Shimon and Sarah, Avram, and so they would pull one off. File, okay, good, here, use this get. They didn't know that you had to write a get, Lishma. So you have to say b'fanei nechtam to verify that it was done l'shma. However, the Gemara says, in Bavel, they weren't amaratzim. In Bavel, they knew what they were doing. So if a get came from Bavel, you wouldn't need to say b'fanei nechtam, because they knew that it had to be done l'shma. So now that we have that halacha, we need to know what Bavel is. Is Bavel Borsif or is Borsif Bavel? Because we need to know when we're going to require b'fanei nechtam, when we're not going to require b'fanei nechtam. That's the nafkamina in regards to get. That's the first suggestion of Rashi. Then Rashi says, but there's really a much more basic nafkamina. One of the things that are important to write in a get is where the get was written. So you have to write the accurate name of the place where the get was written. So Rashi says, V'ani omer nafkamina l'gitei nashim linyan shina shmo shma shem iro v'ira. Puzzle. If you write the wrong city, it's puzzle. V'tzarech lichtov shem shalachshav. You have to write the contemporary name of the city. You don't tell me the ancient name of the city. If you're writing again in Iraq, you don't write Bavel. You write Iraq. You have to say the name that it's called right now. So it's important to know that what used to be Bavel is Borsif. What used to be Borsif is Bavel. Names of cities change at some point. So that's how Rashi says the simple nafkamina. Why would he say a different pshat? His second nafkamina is so good. Why would you have to say this whole Torah about Lishma? So Tosfos points out Rashi's second nafkamina is incorrect. He says Bavel is not an ear. The halacha is in a get, you're supposed to write the name of the city where the get was given. You don't write the name of the country where the get was given. I mean, how far are you going to go? You can write the city, the state, the region, the country, the continent. You don't just keep going. You write the name of the city. There's a din that you write the name of the city. Me'echi tasty that you would write Bavel. Bavel's not the name of a city. Bavel's the name of a country. So he says that wouldn't be a nafkamina, legite nashim, to say that has to shemira v'shemira. That's why Tosa says Rashi's nafkamina is not a good nafkamina. Now the Rashash comments that maybe you do have very often, sometimes something could be the name of a larger place and also the name of a city within that place. We have New York City within New York State. So it could be the name of, but there was a city named Bavel. And Rosh Hashanah doesn't just stam say it. He has a raya from other Gemaras where he points out that it's a machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos l'shitasam, where Rashi and other Gemaras assumes Bavel is the name of a city and Tosfos assumes that it's not the name of a city, it's only the name of a country. Okay, so that's the Nafkamina Legite Nashim Hadron Alachvam Madlik. And now we start one of the more challenging, but also one of the more Halach Lamaisa critical Halach Lamaisa Prakim of Masech Shabbos, and that is Perakira. Perakira primarily involves the Yisurim D'Rabbanan relating to Bishul B'Shabbos. Not cooking itself, but the Yisurim D'Rabbanan that are associated with Bishul. Pretty much there are three basic Yisurim D'Rabbanan that are associated with Bishul. There's an Isser of Shehiya, an Isser of Hachzara, and an Isser of Hatmana. Shehiya means leaving food cooking on a stove from before Shabbos. You put it up before Shabbos and let it cook into Shabbos. Hachzara means taking food that's already cooked, putting it on a stove or in an oven to warm it up on Shabbos, and Hatzmana means to insulate the food to maintain its warmth. All three of those things are usher in different contexts. Obviously, we have to learn what the heterim are. The two primary concerns that we're gonna have to deal with in terms of these Yisurim D'Rabbanan is that, meaning what motivated the Rabbanan to asur these things. You have fully cooked food. It's not Bishul, so why can't I warm it up in the oven? A lot of people think you can. That's one of the more common mistakes out there, is that if you have fully cooked solid food, that you can just put it in the oven on Shabbos to warm it up, as long as the oven's on before Shabbos. That is obviously not true. But what's wrong with it? What was Chazal's problem with that? So Chazal's problem with that was twofold. First of all, there's mechzi kimavashel. There's the concern that you're going to do things that look very much like cooking, like taking a pan of food and putting it in an oven. That looks a lot like cooking. If you put it on top of a pot that's on top of a stove, well, that doesn't look so much like cooking, because who cooks like that? So that you could avoid mechzi kimavashel by doing things in a very unconventional way. And then you have a concern called shemi yechata, that if you have an exposed flame or a flame that can easily be adjusted without any reminders, so there's a concern that you're going to come to stoke the coals and adjust the flame to make it warm up more quickly, to heat it up more quickly. Those are the two primary concerns that motivated these Yisurim D'Rabbanan. So in this parak we're going to talk mostly about Shehiya and Achzara, and about those types of concerns. There are also three types of ovens that Chazal speak about. We're mostly going to be talking about Akira. Akira is the coolest of the three ovens. The Tanur has the most intense heat, the Kupach has a medium level of heat, the Kira is the coolest of the three types of ovens. It's more of a stovetop than it is an oven. So says the Mishnah, Kira shisi kua bekashu begvava. If you have a Kira that's lit with straw, with stubble, something like that, nosmele atafshil, you're allowed to put food on top of such a stove on, let's say, we're not going to say on Shabbos, before Shabbos, you're allowed to put food on top of such a stove. Very vague statement. What does that mean, that you're allowed to put food on top of such a stove? Are we talking about hachzara on Shabbos, fully cooked food on the stove? Are we talking about raw food before Shabbos? What does this mean that you're allowed to put food on? Doesn't say. We'll get to it. Begefesu be'etzim lo yitei nachi yigrof. If the flame is being fueled by peels and by pieces of wood, then you're not allowed to put the food on the stove. You have to shovel it out first. Or cover the coals with ashes. This is Garuf V'Katam. Garuf V'Katam solves the problem of Shami Yechata B'Gachol. Remember we said there's a problem that you might come to adjust the flame to stoke the coals? Well, there are two ways to solve the problem. One is by sweeping out the coals. So if there are no coals there anymore, you're not going to stoke them because they're not there. The other is by covering them with ashes, which serves as a reminder that it's different, and that's what we do in the form of a blech. When we put a blech over a fire, we're doing that so you're not going to be mechata, so you'll realize this is different, this is unusual. Now, the Chazon Ish didn't like the idea of using a metal blech like we do, mostly based on how Rashi explains what yitein ha'efer means. What does it mean to cover it with ashes? Says Rashi, al gabe gecholim l'chasosam, to cover up the coals, ulitzaninam, and to cool them down. Meaning it wasn't enough that you covered the coals and therefore you're not going to come to adjust it. It has to be a covering that actually affects its ability to warm things. So you cover it with ashes, the coals aren't going to be as hot anymore, they're going to be cooled down. But says Chazon Ish, you're going to take a metal sheet and put it over a fire, so that's a conductor of heat. A metal sheet conducts heat. It's going to make things, it will evenly distribute the heat. Adarabha. In industrial kitchens, they very often they don't use open flames. They have have a big metal sheet that they fry the eggs on and they cook the steaks on, and they do. So that's not that the Chazon Ish held that that's not called Garav V'Katam. We're makel on that issue, but the Chazon Ish was machmir about that issue. So anyway, so that's the first line of the Mishnah, very vague as to what it's talking about, whether it's talking about Shi'i Achzara. So the Mishnah adds two machlokasim that are about that first line. What is it that we're saying is not allowed and only becomes allowed with Garav V'Katam? So Beishami Omrim Chamin Avalot Tavshil. Beishami says, first of all, we're only talking about liquids. We're not talking about Tavshil. We're not talking about cooked food. That's what you're allowed to put on once it's Garav V'Katam. But Tavshil, even if it's Garav V'Katam, you're not allowed to put it on the stove. Ubeisalam Chamin V'Tavshil. Beisal says, no, if it's Garav V'Katam, if you've covered it with the ashes, you've swept it out, so that's good enough. You could even put Tavshil. You're even allowed to put dry foods on the stove. That's machlokas number one. Beishamiyom, second machlokas, notlin avalo machzirin. That once it's Garav V'Katam, you're allowed to take the food, but you're not allowed to put it back on Shabbos. Meaning, that's still going to be a problem of mechzi kimevashel. So, but even when it's Garav V'Katam, to put food on Shabbos, that you're not allowed to do. So what are you allowed to do then? You're allowed to leave it there from before Shabbos if it's Garav V'Katam, but you're not allowed to put it there on Shabbos. Beisilom af machzirin. Beisil says, nah, you're even allowed to put it there on Shabbos. So those are the two machloksim to try to explain what that first very vague line of the Mishnah is. So says Gemara, Yubayilahu. Now, this second machloks Beishamim Beisil was, once you've already done Garav V'Katam, what are you now allowed to do? Does that now permit Hachzara, or does it only permit Shehiyah? It only permits leaving food on from before Shabbos, but would not permit Hachzara. The Gemara is going to ask a very similar question, but not in terms of once it's Garav V'Katam, what are you allowed to do? Rather, the Gemara is going to ask, when the first line of the Mishnah says that if it's not Garav V'Katam, you're not allowed to put food on the stove, does that mean you're not allowed to do Hachzara, or does that mean you're not allowed to do Shehiyah? So where's the Machlokas V'Shan Beisilal at the end of the Mishnah? It's about what you are allowed to do once it's Garav V'Katam. The Gemara is going to ask, what are you not allowed to do when it's not Garav V'Katam? So Yibayilahu, Hai Lo Yitain. When it says that Lo Yitain, that you shouldn't be Yitain the food, Lo Yachzirhu, does it mean you're not allowed to do Achzara Avalishol Smashin, but to do Shehiyah, to leave it on the flame from before Shabbos, that's okay. Afal pishenu garvenu katum. Even though it's not Garav V'Katam, the flame hasn't been covered. Umani, and who would that be in accordance with? Chananya hi. That would be assuming like the makel sheet of Chananya. Ditanya Chananya Omer. Kol shu kemachol ben drusai. Mutul shosal gabe kira afal pishenu garvenu katum. Chananya happens to hold that once the food is cooked to the bare minimum level of being edible, even though it's not delicious yet, it's not good, but it's barely edible. It's just cooked enough to be edible. That's Machal Ben Drusai, so then you're allowed to leave such a food on a Kira, you're allowed to do Shehiyah, you're allowed to leave it on an open flame on Shabbos. So if you have a chalent cooking on your stovetop, according to Chananya, if somebody would eat it, not that you'd be happy with it, but you could give it to your yeshiva bacher or something, and he'd eat it, so then that's you're allowed to leave it cooking into Shabbos. That's enough. And that's a major kula, that you're allowed to do that. O Dilma, or maybe Lishos Tanan, the Mishnah is telling us, no, if it's not Garav V'Katam, you can't even do Shehiyah. You can't even leave it on the flame before Shabbos, even if it's at Machal Ben Drusai. The Garav V'Katam in Ilo Lo, unless you put a blech on. Only if you put a blech on, if you do make a Garav V'Katam, that's when you'd be allowed to do Shehiyah. V'kolshken l'hachzir. And then certainly you would not be allowed to do Hachzara, obviously, if it's not Garav V'Katam. So which does our Mishnah mean? Does our Mishnah mean that if it's not Garav V'Katam, you cannot do Hachzara, but you can do Shehiyah? Or does it mean you can't do Shehiyah, and therefore, obviously, you can't do Hachzara either? Hachzara is much stricter than Shehiyah, because Hachzara is putting something on Shabbos. The Gemara is going to try to bring three rayas as to what our Mishnah means. The first raya is in today's daf, the next two rayas are in tomorrow's daf. Raya number one, Tashima, Midiktani Trei Bavi B'Masnisin. take a look at what happens later on in our Mishnah, where we had these two machloksim, Beishamai and Beisilel. Beishamai or Mechamin of Lotavshil, Beisilel or Mechamin Vitavshil. Beishamai says that the first line of our Mishnah is about only liquids, not solids. Beisilel said solids and liquids. Beishamai or Mnothlin of Alamachsirin, Beisilel or Mnothmachsirin. Once it's Garav Vakatim, Beishamai says you're not allowed to do Achzara. Beisilel says you are allowed to do Achzara. So Yerm Bishlam Lishos Tanan, if you're going to tell me that the first line of the Mishnah of what you're not allowed to do is all about Shehiya, Hachi Katani, then the Mishnah reads pretty clearly. Kirashi Sikua Bekashu Begvava, Mashinala Tavshil, Begefas of Eitzim, Lo Yisha Achigrov Achitin Eifer. If you have a stove, you're not allowed to do Shehiya unless you do Grufo Ketuma. Umahin Mashin, Shehiya of what? What are you putting on the stove? So that's why we have the first Machlokas Besham Besil, Besham Yom Chamin Ovelo Tavshil, liquids and not solids, Besil Mcham Vitavshil, both liquids and solids. But the whole machlokas is about shehiya, and then the second machlokas b'shan beisul comes to clarify v'kihechi de pligi belishos pligi nami belahachzir. Just like they argue about shehiya, they argue also about hachzara. Shebeisham yomrim not levelom machzirin beisulom rav machzirin. That beisul would say that you're even allowed to do hachzara once it's garav katum. But if the first line of the Mishnah is already about Hachzara, Hachikatani, Kirashi Sikor, Bekashu, Gvav, Machzirin, Alea Tavshil. First line of the Mishnah is telling me that if you have a stove that's warmed with, that's fueled by Kashu, Gvav, you could do Hachzara. Begevasu, Beitim, Lo Yachzara, Shigrof, Hachitin, Efer. If it's fueled with Gevas and Eitim, you're not allowed to do Hachzara. Umahin, Machzirin. What is the Hachzara being done with? Beishami, or Mechamin, of Tavshil, Beisom, Mechamin, Vitavshil. And then Beishami Omrim Notlin Avalomachzirin. Ubisolomram Avmachzirin. Hasulamali. But wait a second, then what's the third line of the Mishnah coming to tell me? That Beisilel holds that once you do Garav Akatim, you're allowed to be Machzir? Of course, we already said in the first line of the Mishnah. First line of the Mishnah says, here's what you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to do Achzara until it's Garav Akatim. So then what's Beisilel adding in the last line of the Mishnah when he says, oh, and when it's Garav Akatim, you know what you're allowed to do? Hachzara. We already had that in the first line. So says Gemara, Liola Mei Melach LaHachzir Tanan. No, it is about Hachzara. And we'll read it tomorrow, but essentially, all that the third line of the Mishnah is telling me is that the first line of the Mishnah is supposed to read like Beis Hillel and not like Beis Shammai. That's what the third line of the Mishnah is adding. Mir Tashem, we'll pick up from there tomorrow. Oh, yeah.